21. Maddie, Brewster, Gilbert, and Sid held hands, grasped the motionless wrists of Pete and Gert to form a human chain 6 people long, and then teleported to Gary's crowded living room. Jeff and Roy remained frozen in place. Philip had returned with an inert Tyler, and Gary was home again. The place was packed. Gary stroked his chin and looked at Tyler standing in the corner, while Hubert slumped nearby, concerned and exhausted.
"Yeah," Gary said. "That's better. I thought keeping Tyler in the bathroom would be funny, but seeing him in there just made things weird for me, and he didn't even know what was happening."
Philip sat on one of the built-in couches in Gary's conversation pit, his eyes aimed straight ahead with an expression of perfect joylessness on his face.
"Yeah. It sort of made you wonder who the joke was on."
Hubert said,
"Indeed, Master Gary. I think he'll prefer having him out here, and I'm sure he'll prefer it once you release him from that spell."
"Yes," Gary said, "about that. Leave him where he is, but turn him around so he's facing the wall. That should confuse him when he snaps out of it."
Hubert sighed heavily, said,
"Yes, sir,"
and began laboriously turning Tyler to face the opposite direction. Sid cleared his throat.
"Terribly sorry to barge in like this, but I fear we have 2 more living statues to add to your menagerie."
Gary, Philip, and Hubert all turned to face the newcomers. Philip said,
"Kids, I'm so glad you're okay. I'm sorry I left you with the Magnuses like that. It's just this defensive macro of mine."
Brewster said, "We know, you couldn't help it." Maddie asked,
"When will that stop, by the way?"
"When I deactivate the macro," Philip said.
"Is that hard?"
"No."
"Have you done it then?"
"No,"
Maddie said.
"You know, I had just about decided that you weren't the enemy."
Gilbert said,
No. I understand how you feel, Maddie, but the main thing the Magnuses seem to want is to get their hands on Philip. It's just logical that we'd keep that from happening."
Philip said,
"Exactly."
Sid said,
"Quite. So you see, my wrathful young friend, in this case, Philip's cowardice works to our advantage."
Philip's expression soured. He turned away from the others, sat back on the couch, and stared at the wall opposite him.
"Have we managed to ascertain what, besides their hands on Philip, that these 2 hooligans actually want?"
Sid asked. Gary laughed.
"Yeah, it's the dumbest thing ever. They want Philip's job."
"Job,"
Philip said, his voice dripping with contempt.
"Being chairman isn't a job. They pay you for a job. Being chairman is a fat wad of responsibilities wrapped up in a thick sheet of blame, like some sort of wretched burrito."
Hubert, having just pulled his hands back slowly and determining that Tyler was balanced properly, said,
"Speaking of which, would anyone like something to eat? I could easily whip something up."
The room practically rang with the sound of 5 people saying, "No, thank you." Gary said,
"The Magnuses came to me while I was out at the clearing with the old dragon pens looking for Philip."
"Dragon pens?" Brewster asked. Philip said,
"It's a long story."
Gary said,
"Yeah, some would say too long, too fragmented, and without clearly defined stakes. Anyway, they came to me and said that they think it's time for a change in leadership and that one of them should be chairman."
"Which one?" Gilbert asked.
"You know, I wasn't really clear on that. They said they'd been to see the rest of my friends, and then they asked if they had my vote. I have to assume that all the guys told them no. Your parents, too. That must be why the Magnuses made statues out of them."
"How did you keep them from freezing you?"
Maddie asked.
I told them I'd be delighted to vote for a Magnus. I would be, too, as long as I knew he had no chance of winning. I didn't know they were freezing people who said no. I just agreed to it as a goof. I even agreed to nominate him.
I never wanted to be chairman, Philip said. Everybody else just sort of decided that I was in charge and started doing what I told them. I even had them hold elections every year to give someone else a chance at the job, but nobody serious ever ran against me.
Gary said,
seems like the Magnuses were serious.
I'd be happy not to be chairman anymore, but not if my successor is going to be a Magnus.
When are the next elections?
Sid asked.
Tomorrow,
Gary said,
during our big annual meeting at Castle Camelot.
Camelot?
Maddie said.
Camelot's real?
No, but there's a castle there.
Gilbert said,
okay then. It seems to me that we have two problems. One is that a bunch of people are frozen, and the other is that Philip might lose his job to a Magnus. If we can solve one of the problems, it'll take care of the other.
Sid said,
quite so. If we successfully unfreeze the Magnus's myriad victims, they'll certainly vote against said Magni in tomorrow's election.
So how do we do that?
Maddie asked. Philip said,
that's the thing. It's easy to deactivate a macro you wrote yourself, but it's harder to undo someone else's work. You don't have access to the source code, so you have to sort of pick things apart logically, figure out how the macro works, and interfere with it. It's difficult work, and our best coder is frozen.
Philip pointed at Jeff. Gary said,
he's our best coder, but he's not the best coder.
Philip said,
okay, he's not the best coder in the world, but he's the best among us.
Gary shook his head.
He's the best coder in this room, but he's not the best coder we know.
Philip shook his head.
No.
Gary said,
oh, yes.
Gilbert slapped his palm to his head.
Of course. Sid looked delighted.
I feel like a fool for not thinking of it myself.
Philip said,
we shouldn't involve her.
Sid said, we most definitely should.
Gilbert agreed.
She'd be mad at us if we didn't.
Brewster said,
if she's so great, why haven't you already?
Gary almost giggled with delight.
Because she's Philip's ex, and she's mad at him.
And there are three of her,
Gilbert said.
But only two of her will talk to me,
Philip moaned. Five people appeared in the sky between the sparkling Mediterranean and the ceiling of blue dotted with puffy white clouds. Brewster said,
it's very pretty.
Maddie squinted down at the sea.
Yeah. So, are we looking for an island or a boat or what?
Philip said,
we materialized facing the wrong direction. Turn around.
Maddie and Brewster both twisted around to glance back over their shoulders, then froze, eyes wide, mouths agape, and muttering amazed profanities. Below them, they saw a vast, perfectly round divot in the surface of the sea, as if someone had used an ice cream scoop a mile wide to remove several million gallons of seawater, and the rest of the ocean had never bothered to rush in and fill the hole. Instead of water, sea life, or even a concrete wall, any of which would have made more sense, the inner surface of the hemispherical dent in the ocean was covered by a city, the most beautiful city the twins had ever seen. People, little more than moving black dots from this height, teemed along footpaths and pedestrian boulevards, cut like terraces between the shining white buildings. The roofs all held plants and paths. Many of the buildings up around the rim of the city, where the hole in the ocean seemed shallowest, jutted up higher than the surface, looking out over the waves and towering over the city below.
Behold, Sid said, for there it is. Atlantis.
Nice, isn't it?
Gilbert added.
Atlantis was real,
Brewster gasped. Philip muttered,
in a sense.
Sid said,
yes, the fantastical ancient city of Atlantis, spoken of in myth and legend, is only real in the sense that there was a fantastical city called Atlantis here in ancient times, about which myths and legends will be created in that sense. Atlantis is real. But not quite real enough to satisfy our Philip, I'm afraid.
Philip said,
the Atlantis we all grew up hearing about was created by mysterious, inscrutable ancients. I promise you, the woman who made Atlantis is all too scrutable.
Sid said,
she discovered the file, developed abilities as she manipulated it that the rest of us never imagined, or in many cases can even understand. She then traveled back in time, where she found Atlantis, and herself.
She found herself? Like an eat, pray, love kind of thing?
Maddie asked.
No, Sid said. I mean that when she arrived in Atlantis, she found that she was already there. A future version of herself had gone even further back in time and founded the city, using her powers through the file to build the impossible metropolis you see before you. Well, beneath you. She abided there, in Atlantis, with her future self for many years, more than ample time to meet, date, and dump our friend Philip. Then she went back in time, founded and built the city, and waited for herself to arrive.
Brewster said, that's some story.
And it isn't over yet.
Gilbert said,
yeah. The way I hear it, eventually she leaves Atlantis, goes back to her own time, and gets some kind of a government job. There's probably a nice pension with that.
Maddie said,
that all sounds pretty mysterious and inscrutable to me.
Indeed it is,
Sid said.
I'm afraid that Philip can't see that for himself, as he's too close to the subject. The forest is blocking his view of the trees. Or words to that effect.
That and he's crabby about his ex-girlfriend's success,
Gilbert said.
You should get used to that, Matty, because he's not the only guy who acts that way.
Philip growled,
whatever. Look, I let you kids come along because I thought you'd like to see Atlantis.
And, Gilbert said, because having other people present makes a shouting match less likely.
I had multiple reasons, but this is going to be hard enough without a lot of smart aleck comments or confusing chatter. When we get to a place, please let me do all the talking, okay?
Sid laughed.
Let you do all the talking? Oh, Philip, you poor chap. Having you say that to me is tantamount to attending a stunt show and having Evil Knievel insist that you allow him to do all the jumping.
Philip squinted at Sid and Gilbert.
Remind me again why you came along.
Gilbert said,
we are here because the kids are here. When we chose to train them, we promised that we would help them fix their parents and do everything we could to keep them both safe until that's done. We've let them out of our sight once and it didn't work out well. We're not making that mistake again.
Sid said,
also, we are both delighted at the prospect of watching you come to your ex-girlfriend, hat in hand, especially seeing as she is both an old friend and seething with residual anger at you.
Philip stared at Sid for several seconds before finally saying,
yeah, makes sense. Well, we might as well get this over with.
Philip flew toward the great sunken bowl of Atlantis, stretched out forward Superman style, as the medieval English wizards always did. Brewster, Maddie, Gilbert, and Sid flew in the standard magician mode, standing up straight, hands resting on their walking sticks, and their capes flapping in the wind behind them. They flew behind Philip for a moment, then accelerated and spread out, flanking him on both sides. Philip looked to his left and right at his four companions.
I feel like the odd man out here,
Philip said.
You're all standing up while I'm lying on my belly. It's making me uncomfortable.
Sid said.
Oh, nonsense, dear fellow. Think nothing of it. If anything should make you uncomfortable, it's the fact that when we were behind you, we could see right up your robe.
Philip's eyes darted to Maddie, who was staring off into the distance, determined not to make eye contact.
I'm wearing trousers,
Maddie said.
I wouldn't know. I didn't look.
Good.
I made a point of not looking.
I'd imagine.
I didn't want to look at all.
I get it. I understand.
Both Maddie and Brewster felt a surge of vertigo as they flew over the rim of the city, and the waves just 100 feet below gave way to a steeply descending wall of buildings, plants, and people. The group flew down through the middle of the city. Buildings towered over them. People looked out from the windows and walkways, watching them with mild curiosity as they passed. They sank to the bottom of the great bowl that formed Atlantis, toward a large circular park with paths that radiated like the spokes of a wheel from a monument at the city's exact center. A ring of official-looking buildings sat along the outskirts of the park, with one building standing out by being the only one not drawing attention to itself. Instead of the columns, steps, decorative roof lines, and grand entrances the other buildings featured, it was constructed from plain, rectangular boxes of various sizes, stacked on top of each other in a manner that was meant to look haphazard, but was far too attractive to be random. They landed in the park just in front of a large stone patio. A wall of glass doors at the patio's far side appeared to be the building's only entrance. Two tall, muscular men wearing kilts, mesh shirts, and a liberal coating of oil stood on the patio, brandishing spears and staring down at the visitors impassively. Brewster looked at the guards and said under his breath,
"Huh, that's quite an outfit,"
Maddie said.
"Yeah, it is,"
in a very different tone of voice. Philip approached the guards and said,
"Hello."
One of the guards said,
"Hello. We're here to see."
"We know,"
the guard interrupted.
"She's expecting you."
Brewster asked, "Did you tell her we were coming?" Philip shook his head.
"You don't ever really tell Brit the Elder anything. You just remind her."
Maddie said,
"Wait a second. What did you call her?"
"Brit the Elder. And I'm pretty sure you've met her, at least one of her."
Brewster and Maddie both said,
"Aunt Brit?"
The wall of glass doors silently slid open. Brit the Elder stepped out onto the patio, wearing a flowing floral print dress. As the door glided further to the side, a second Brit, this one in a severe black pantsuit, walked out to join her. In unison, they said,
"Kids!"